Technorama episode 643, This Space for Rent. Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome! This is the podcast. Well, we're just going to have a whole lot of fun, and you're welcome to join along with us. We use this as a crucible for testing other crazy ideas. That's kind of what it is. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and right there across the table from me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I am doing fantastic. Couldn't be any better.
How was your weekend in the mountain cabin?
I got to play amateur electrician all weekend.
I got to play amateur plumber.
Oh, no. Maybe we should save that for our Patreon show. No,
that's exactly what it is. If you look at the Patreon title, it's, and then Saturday night happened.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I put in an outlet. Put some ceiling fans in and stuff like that. But the outlet was a little problematic, but I was able to do it. But I have a story about it though.
We'll get to our Patreon people in just a little bit. Yeah. But first we want to cover the feedback. Letters. Oh, we get letters. This is where we put the music in post-production.
Yeah, that's right.
He's opening way too much mail tonight. We have some voicemail. Somebody has called us on the listener line. Can get in touch with us on the listener line at 707-530-2428.
Is our car insurance warranty up again?
Yeah. No, we got a fax machine again.
Yeah.
That's no, we actually got a real human being calling us on purpose.
Well, we don't know that. Yeah, actually I do. I do know him personally.
707-530-2428 is the magic number, and you get, I don't want to download it. Stop it.
I thought you just played it a minute ago.
I did, but then it must have timed out because it went back to whatever. Click click. There was a problem playing this audio file. Fine, download it. Gee whiz. Live editing, gotta love it. Okay,
quick time preview
show in Finder. I'm just gonna hit spacebar.
Hey Chuck, Craig, this is John.
Hey John.
Hi.
Hey John.
Two things. One, Craig, this is the closest thing you're gonna get from a podcast from me, so you may as well just accept it. And two, today's nature fact. Did you know that if you twist the head on a owl 360 degrees, it pops right off? Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
Okay, so John Miller Jr.'s nature tip of the day.
I want to know how he found that out.
Yeah, I'm not calling PETA on that one.
Yeah.
Let's.
Wait a minute. I got a fake owl in my garage. His head will just twirl.
That's where you put the camera.
Right. Hey, by the way, speaking of that owl. The other morning, I opened the garage door. I took the dog out. And when we came back in, I usually sit in the garage for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just if the weather's nice and I enjoyed my coffee or something. And a couple of birds had come in the garage looking for a place to nest. I'm like, no, not in here. And one of them had landed on this shelf right behind that little owl.
Yeah.
And when it saw me, it tried to fly out. It hit the owl's head and that owl's head started spinning around. That was the funniest thing.
We've got a stray cat that comes along. She's really skittish. I mean, it's almost like a magnetic, not a distraction, but repel. And when I get close, she moves away. When I get close, she moves away. Well, I was going to feed her, and she was standing between the chair legs of our patio furniture. And I must have startled her because she backed up and hit her head, and then she startled herself and ran right into the other chair. Like it's like ping pong, like a ping pong, like a, oh,
I'm
man,
surrounded.
She takes off. It's like, I don't like that guy. He makes my head hurt.
No kidding.
Like I didn't.
That'll learn you.
That's funny. Oh, poor little kitty. She's already, it takes enough to survive out here in the desert to be a cat.
I know, right?
All right. We also have our question of the week from the internet. We posted that last, we asked you last week and we posted it to the internet this week. Do you want to take the Technorama questions? I don't know. Did I get any? For, I didn't, I don't know if I got mine for my share.
You got one in there.
No, I did. Okay.
So John Miller Jr. Wait, oh man, he just
forgot to ask the question.
Chiming in. Oh yeah, that's right. What is something for free on the from the internet which everybody should take advantage of? And John Miller Jr. chimes in. Of course, this is a something near and dear to my heart: LibreOffice and OpenOffice. Not necessarily just those programs, but open source applications, which is something that you can download for free off the internet. He says two Microsoft Office alternatives that are currently fully compatible with the latest versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and don't include the Microsoft price tag. And that he says, if it's free, it's for me.
All right.
I would put Linux in there too, because you got a little older computer. You can put a modern operating system on there and still use it.
Oh, if you have even like a Raspberry Pi, the Pi 4s are pretty powerful. You could.
Yes.
It's not quite a desktop, but hey, dual display, dual HDMI displays.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly run a couple of apps simultaneously on those things. You know, would go crazy, but yeah.
All right. Mike Hamilton says, not sure of free from the internet, but if you mean free of having to access the internet, I'd say libraries. Well, if you mean free, well, there are a lot of free libraries that you can do free things, you know, get their free stuff. If you mean free found on the internets, I'd say podcasts. I might add YouTube, but that's information on that you might want to, that you can pay with as well. What else you got?
Our buddy Steve London, he says ServiceNow PDI, the personal developer instance, those are free. It's creme la creme of free stuffs online. So of course we're kind of plugging our
full disclosure.
We work there. But on more serious note, OpenOffice, Google Drive, which technically it's free, you know, with unless you need to pay for space or anything, or Google Suite. And Microsoft Visual Studio. I use the VS Code all the time, and it's free for Microsoft. The list can be long, but is it really free? Well, VS Code is open source. Again, open source. I love open source if I can use it. And Lone Guys Knight says calls to long distance family and friends.
Oh, man. Remember when that was a thing? It's like, oh, yeah. You can only stay on the phone with grandma for 10 minutes.
I know my dad was just telling me about party lines. And I know about party lines.
That's called Clubhouse now.
Yeah. He said his sister kept getting in trouble because there's a 15-minute limit. And they would cut the call off. Of course, she was a teenager. What would she do? She'd call back or get the other person to call. And then they would kind of maximize that time, and she got in trouble for being on the phone more than she was supposed to. The neighbors were complaining.
That's why, you know, back in the 80s, that's why bulletin boards were so cool. You could get that long distance feel with sending messages and receiving messages, especially if you sign up for a networked one that was, you know, across the world. Now, it might take a few days to get your response, but hey, it was a way to do that in a nerdy fashion. Man. So you made a local
flipping
call
out when the first time I used IRC on the internet. You know, just I'm chatting with somebody, you know, on the other side, wherever, and it's somewhere else, you know, and it was pretty cool.
Don't be jealous because I'm chatting with hot babes online all day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. Good times back in the early internet.
It's a 58-year-old dude that lived just across the street.
Yeah.
We didn't know back then what we know
it's
now.
It's one of those memes, what you think you're doing, what you're actually doing.
That's right. All right. Thank you very much, everybody, who contributed to the feedback section this time. We'll give you another question at the end of the show. Join us. Jump in. Have some fun. We're going to go on to the history segment with some more fun. things you didn't know or probably didn't want to know. This is On This Day in History for June 16th, 2021. It is the 167th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 198 days remaining in 2021, and even fewer than that until Christmas, and fewer than that until Dragon Con. So wake up! It was on this date in 1871 that the University's Tests Act of 1871 allowed students to enter the universities of Oxford, Cambridge, and Durham without religious tests, except for those intending to study theology, of course.
That's what I was going to say. What if they're studying? All right. Also on June 16th, 1884, the first purpose-built roller coaster, LaMarcus Adna Thomason's Switchback Railway, opened in New York's Coney Island Amusement Park.
A purpose built, not accidentally built. It was built.
I know. I was trying to figure that out.
It was built. It wasn't like retrofitted on a bunch of spare parts and go, hey, we got this crazy thing, dangerous thing called a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's got like nails hanging out and odd pieces of wood.
Why do they call it the tooth chipper? Sorry, that was a
Widowmaker.
That was a Simpsons one, yeah, where it stops real fast and everybody bangs their face on the front bar.
Oh, yeah.
That same date in 1903, Roald Amundsen left Oslo, Norway to commence the first east-to-west navigation of the Northwest Passage.
It was also on this date in 1903 that the Ford Motor Company is incorporated.
110 years ago, the company formerly known as Computing Tabulating Recording Company is founded as IBM. No, it was founded as that, but then was later renamed to IBM. That was in Endicott, New York. Boy, I'm glad we don't call it that anymore. Good old CTRC.
That's a mouthful. It was 58 years ago today as part of the Vostok 6 mission. Cosmonaut Valentina Tereshkova. Chris, there's not a K in there.
Tereshkova
becomes the first woman in space.
Good for her. 58 years ago, that same date in 1972, the largest single-site hydraulic power project in Canada was inaugurated at Churchill Falls Generating Station.
It was also on this date in 1977 that Oracle Corporation was first founded as IBM, and then it,
No.
The Oracle Corporation is incorporated. Was that?
NCR?
Yeah, NCR. The Oracle Corporation is incorporated in Redwood Shores, California, as Software Development Laboratories, SDL, Larry Ellison, Bob Miner, and Ed Oates.
I think they did a little too much SDL back in the 60s.
That's right.
9 years ago today, China successfully launched its Shenzhou 9 spacecraft, carrying three astronauts, including the first female Chinese astronaut, Liu Yang, to the Chang'e 1 orbital module. Apologies to my Chinese friends if I just like trampled all over your linguistics.
It sounds like the ship from Discovery, the Shenzhou. And June 16th, 2012, the United States Air Force robotic Boeing X-37B space plane returned to Earth after a classified 469-day orbital mission.
That's a long classified mission.
That's the one that looks like the little small shuttle.
It was 5 years ago today that the Shanghai Disneyland Park, the first Disney park in mainland China, opened to the public. Happy birthday goes out in this date to German mathematician and physicist Julius Plücker, born on this date in 1801.
And it was also American tribal leader Geronimo was born 192 years ago today.
I forgot what movie that was on, but they showed like a little audio or video clip of people jumping out a plane. And first Geronimo. One goes out, Geronimo. Second one goes out, Geronimo. Third one comes up dressed as a Native American and goes, me!
Sounds like a Mel Brooks movie.
Someone might be able to help out in the chat. Tell us what that was. Yeah. Ernst Otto Schlick, the German engineer and author, was born on the same date in 1840.
And Russian physicist and mathematician Alexander Friedman was born on this date in 1888.
That doesn't sound like a Russian physicist name, Alexander Friedman. American mathematician and astronomer Peter Stoner.
Yo.
He was born 133 years ago today, man.
And Stan Laurel, the English actor and comedian, was born 131 years ago today.
Laurel and Hardy, classic stuff. Actually, Gates McFadden's last episode of her podcast, she was talking to Brent Spiner, and a lot of it was around Laurel and Hardy and old movies and whatnot. So good conversation. Irish computer scientist and entrepreneur co-founded HP Autonomy, Michael Richard Lynch, was born today in 1965.
And last but not least, American actor John Cho is 49 today.
Woohoo! Listener birthdays this week include Miss Eliza C. from Wayne at the... Did we say her name on the last one? We talked about the bottle opener.
Hey, give her credit again.
All right, 15th. The 16th is Joe Edmison. 16th is also Jason from The Angry Geek. We're wrapping it up quick. 17th is Digital Dan Hook from The Hook Show. Luke Platypus 72 from the UK. Got to get back there and have fish and chips with you again, man. 18th is also Zion Fox from Appleton and Steven from Wichita, Kansas. That's the way it was on this day in history for June 13th, 2021. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Ba, 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 ba. Yes. If you want to be on the birthday calendar, there's a URL right at the bottom of the page. New purple subtitles. They're fun. But if you can't read that and you're listening to this in audio form, you want to go to chuckchat.com/birthday. Get your name on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, even if it's like next February. We're going to get back to February. Trust me.
Yeah. Even if your birthday's in July, we may get back to you in February.
In a few weeks. What? No, what? A few weeks. Back in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
You clearly landed in the wrong planet this day. Okay. We finished the news random button that I can't read. That one looks good.
Good news, crybabies.
All right. Go ahead and take the first story, Craig.
Okay. Actually, I think this picture looks a little funny. I'll explain in a minute. So China's Mars rover took a selfie. Mars selfies aren't limited to American rovers, as The Verge notes. China had its first rover to take a touring group photo by planting a remote camera and posing next to its landing platform. The robotic explorer also snapped an expansive panorama of the site, a photo of the platform by itself, and an unobstructed view of the Martian surface. Perseverance sent its own selfie in April, although it relied on its own arm rather than dropping a camera, you know, hey, baby, did duck lips, you know, and did the selfie. No. Sarong is poised to study the climate and geology of Mars for about 90 days during its official mission. It wouldn't be surprising. We wouldn't be surprised if it lasts longer, like the U.S. made rovers. Even if it winds down its own schedule, it will still have accomplished a lot as the first non-American rover to successfully land on Mars. The selfie is as much about bragging as about its achievement. That it is showing what the Zhurong is like in action, which is a really cool picture. At first I thought, how did they take that picture? Somebody, you know, sacrificed himself, went to Mars and...
No. It was a small animal with a camera, a GoPro on its head.
It does look like Johnny Five a little bit in the head.
Kind of, yeah. It almost looks somewhat Transformers-ish.
Yeah, it's going to start.
There's some pareidolia on there. It's got some wings. Yeah, it's
pretty cool. I think it looks great.
You put stereoscopic vision on anything, it's going to look a little bit human.
Yeah. But it is kind of neat, though. I like the selfie.
That is a great picture. I love seeing pictures like
that. That's what I mean, yeah. It's a great picture.
All right. Shall we go on to the next story?
Why, yes, Charles.
Okay. We have a story about scary asteroids. So on April 13th, 2029, which appears to be Friday the 13th.
Wonderful.
Something unsettling will happen. A decent-sized asteroid, the 1,100-foot-wide Apophis, will pass so close to Earth, it'll be visible in the sky from certain places. Crucially, the giant rock will not strike our humble planet, but it will pass closer than 20,000 miles from the surface, which is closer than where some of the United States' most prized weather satellites orbit. Oh, that would be funny if it came by and knocked out a few satellites as it went by. Ping, dunk, ding.
Be like Independence Day, you know, when the ships came in and they show that satellite and it just goes, yeah.
Yeah, on the surface. Okay. Asteroids like Apophis hold a fascinating place in our existence. Big impacts are at once terrible threats to our lives and potentially the habitability for many species, but they're also extremely rare and irregular events. Yet the internet, awash with clickbait, likes to incessantly warn of incoming threats with misleading headlines like Asteroid heading our way day before presidential election.
Yeah.
No, that was a catastrophe of another type.
Yeah.
And should you be worried about the potential hazardous asteroid passing by Earth today? And one more for you. Massive asteroid will swing by Earth after Valentine's Day. Well, that's a bit vague, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Sometime next week.
I never take a shower before Tuesday. All right. These stories aren't about real danger. Many of the objects pass millions of miles away. Rather, the stories are about sensationalism. No, you don't say, he says with sarcasm, shock, and awe. Mashable right. spoke with NASA's Planetary Defense Officer Lindley Johnson, who understands, perhaps better than anyone on the planet, what will happen when a big one comes.
It's a big one, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
If a serious threat to either a region on Earth, a large swathe of Earth, or perhaps the entirety of Earth is truly on its way, and astronomers will know about it, so will you. NASA created its Planetary Defense Coordinated Office in early 2016 with the mission to provide, quote, timely and accurate information to the government, the media, and the public on close approaches to Earth by potentially hazardous objects, or PHOs. Mmm, I love that Vietnamese soup. Actually, it's pronounced pho. And any potential for impact, unquote. Though sensationalist media stories about incoming asteroids are many, NASA hasn't ever sounded the alarm about a dangerous asteroid bound to impact Earth, or a very worrisome approach. Johnson says, we have never actually issued a warning. Great quote.
Well, there you go.
But they have informed the public about what some asteroids of interest are doing. Yet this Planetary Defense Office exists because at some point a significant impact is inevitable. Unless we build technologies to successfully deflect threatening objects. On June 3rd, 1908, an asteroid some 120 feet or 37 meters wide entered the atmosphere and then blew up over the forest of Siberia, called the Tunguska event. Yes. Blew down trees. People 20 miles away were thrown into the air.
The crappy pictures that came from that. That was the one a long time ago, right?
Yeah, and they went years later, and all the trees were still knocked down. I mean, it looked a lot like
it looked terrible. Yeah, I mean, the pictures weren't fantastic, but it looked devastating. Wow, it's amazing.
20 miles away, and you're getting blown into the air. Okay. Such a blast could harm or devastate an urban area today. Yeah, that would be a serious event, said Johnson. But he added, today there is a strong possibility that we would detect it beforehand. Look out, Chicago!
And do what?
Well, that's what we got to find out. So,
well, my question to you is...
You send up Bruce Willis, of course.
Right. And my question to you is, if something was coming, knowing we can't just leave the planet, do you want to know?
I would.
What are you going to do?
Well,
put a paper bag over your head or something and lie down.
It depends what size and where it's going to hit, right?
If it was a devastating thing coming.
Yes.
Would you want to know?
Yes. Could make peace rather than, oh my God, we're all burning up. And you wouldn't even get that thought out.
I think the meteorite's going to do, or that whatever's going to hit, is going to make peace.
It's going to make pieces of pieces.
Yeah. Right.
I would. I don't know. What about you?
I'm kind of half and half. I mean, I guess I'd want to know because I know my neighbors would probably start freaking out and trying to, I don't know. I don't know what would happen.
Craig,
I remember watching
Craig
that movie.
Getting all, hey, baby, with Kim. we're all going to die tomorrow.
Yeah. But remember, I don't know if you saw it. There was a movie with Steve Carell, and it was the last man on earth. That was Will Forte, a TV show. It was a movie about that happening. And people were having incestual sex and partying, drinking like there's no tomorrow, doing drugs and
all
kinds
of stuff.
Doesn't
sound like my kind of movie.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, as part of the story, you saw people doing, not saw them do it, but you knew there were people were having big parties and stuff. But that's not what the story was about. I'm just saying it was just showing the reactions that people were having. Like, oh, what the hell? I'm just going to enjoy the hell out of it. So it was an interesting movie. I'll say that.
Okay. You say so.
Yeah. But I'm kind of half in it. I guess I'd want to know because yeah, like you say, kind of either make peace or
right.
Maybe do some things you probably wouldn't normally do.
Call up your family, your friends, your dad. Tell them all the things you never thought of before. Dad,
of course,
remember when I was 10? There goes the airline trip.
You know, your bucket list would have to be short because traveling is going to be a problem. Because all the people that are on plane that work on planes are going to be like same thing. Well, I'm just not going to work. So I don't know what you could do.
I would carve something into stone for the scientists in the future to find.
Aliens.
Throw them off the track. Yeah. I'm just screwing with the scientists in the future.
Right.
Why did he draw another picture of a penis? I'm not sure. Everybody draws right. These things, man. It must have been a cult of the penis.
Cult.
All right, we have one more space story for you, now that we're going down that path the wrong way. Go ahead.
Oh, Your turn. That's my cue.
Yes.
Oh, man, I just closed my tab. Hold on a second. You scared me. All right, so speaking of NASA, I know we're kind of space heavy tonight. Why is NASA setting its sights on Venus once again? And no, it's not because of the poem. Anyways.
Hey, I didn't read the headline before I launched into that last little tribe.
Okay. So Elon Musk's gaudy Tesla tribute to the stars and his company's proposed Doge 1 mission may be at the center of space exploration's meme orbit, but Venus is quickly becoming a new center of space exploration scientific efforts. Two new projects that promise to do a lot more than shoot a roadster into space. I don't know why they're capping on that. I like that. Anyway, I'm reading the article.
It was just a publicity stunt.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. On June 2nd, NASA's Administrator Bill Nelson announced that the next two missions selected for the space agency's Discovery program, which uses relatively small compared with, say, a broader New Horizons or flagship programs, missions to unlock the mysteries of our solar system. The selection process for this round started in 2019 when NASA put out a Discovery announcement of opportunity that solicited mission ideas for a new round of Discovery program funding. The four highly competitive finalists announced in February of 2020 included two missions planned for the solar system's hottest planet, Venus, one for Neptune's icy moon, Triton, and one for the volcanic Jovian moon, Io. Of the four finalists, a maximum of two have received funding, and both, it turned out, would be for Venus.
That's so the greedy. Two chosen. That's pretty greedy of Venus. We had four missions.
Yeah, that's right.
Venus, Triton, Io. Well, I guess that was it.
All right. So the two missions chosen are Da Vinci Plus. You have to subscribe $5 a month. And,
yeah. But they have great movies about science and trying to build an airplane centuries ago.
It's a mission to understand the atmospheric evolution of Venus, and Veritas, a mission to better, map the Venusian surface and subsurface. Now both aiming for a launch between 2028 and 2030. Together, they'll be the first NASA spacecraft sent to the second planet in our solar system in the nearly 40 years. It's been that long. So, anyway, there you go. There's more details in there, and we'll leave it at that.
Yes, and then they go into, of course, the whole Earth, Venus, Mars, what happened gravity, runaway, greenhouse effect, blah, you know, blah, blah.
Why don't I? Okay. Now,
finish that thought, because I think we're having the same thought again.
Well, let's see. Why don't they have some generic satellite and make 9 or 20 of them and just start shipping them out and to all the planets? Why do we have to do 2 here? And then there's upgrades and things change, but
they're very expensive. It costs a lot to launch them.
Well, SpaceX is sending up 60 satellites at a time. Why can't we send up 5 at a time or something?
Different mission parameters.
I'm just saying. I mean, I think I can maximize some things here.
That's not what I was thinking. I was thinking instead of going to Mars and trying to live there, we should. There's talk about, hey, we should terraform Mars. Like, no, because Mars has no magnetic core. You're not going to be able to make an atmosphere. It'll just blow away again. It's like, let's cool down Venus because it's closer to the size of Earth, has a whole bunch of stuff in the atmosphere that we could, if you cool it down, then, you know, you might have something a little more livable. What do you think?
I think I'm kind of in the ballpark with you that why were we trying to leave Earth right now anyway?
Because that asteroid's coming. It's inevitable.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Trying to chain the stories together without getting back into the dirty bits.
Yeah. Okay. And there was a man from Venus who's... never mind.
And there we go again.
Yeah.
Let's get to our Hacks and Strange Stories. You know, we should probably play a promo. Do I even have one lined up? We can play this one.
Bob Nerdly is a real Geico insurance customer, not an actor. To help him with his message, we've hired professional voice actor John Bell.
I was having problems downloading my podcast.
In a world where critical information has to get through.
I went to chuckchat.com and clicked on Technorama and gave it a listen. Tech, science, sci-fi interviews, it was great.
A new wind was beginning to blow.
Chuck and Craig are funny, informative. I don't know what I would have done without them.
In the fight for justice, 2 men stood up to help those in need.
Geico Insurance. Only available by listening to Technorama at chuckchat.com.
Feed your inner geek. My throat is starting to hurt.
All right. We have a lot of fun with that one. Thank you, John Bell, once again, for bringing us that bit of entertainment.
Classic.
Where is my 2-up shot? There it is. Okay. We're back.
I love that, though. That's a good example of, he sent me extra material. Guess what I'm going to use? Oh, yeah. At the end, he was goofing around about my throat is starting to hurt.
That dog, every time I hear the neighbor's dog barking next to him, I'm like, I should record this. This is great dog material.
Well, it
reminds me of that dog.
I remember when we're making that, watching one of those commercials, the real one, and you could hear like the background, there was dog barking. That's kind of why I was like, I'm just going to add some dog or some odd ambient thing in there.
Anyway, bird.
This is the behind the scenes work process of making these stupid little audio clips.
Oh, they're not stupid little audio clips, because this kind of stuff comes back and I get to come up with these crazy ideas all the time at work, and people like latch onto them. Where do you come up with this stuff? Like, been doing it for years.
That's right.
Should have been in marketing years ago. I don't know. If you ever wanted to do stuff like this, and I know this goes way back. We had like a 7th grade audio video class where we were allowed to make commercials and do creative recordings, video and audio. I mean, back when you had top loading VCRs and the tape was like an inch thick.
Yeah. You know,
there was no beta or just, you could use your imagination. The creativity came out. That was a lot of fun. Still remember me and Steve Rivard doing the audio commercial for Zing Zit Remover. we found a turntable. We needed a sound effect. Just listen. as Zing Zit Remover removes the zits from what's his name's face. I forgot who, if we had a fictitious character, if I named Steve. And then we took this LP and we ran it with our finger really fast. I mean, so fast that the needle was like practically thrown off the record. It was a sound effects record. I don't even remember what it was from, like a jet taking off or something. And we just made it go really fast. It was like,
oh yeah, like, right.
Well, that was a good sound effect for that.
That's right. Oh boy.
Anyway, yeah, and of course we didn't have any way to capture that sound electronically, so everything was through the built-in microphone on the crappy school
some
tape
in the background, and
the school tape recorder was one of those kind where you slapped it in and there were four or five buttons. Anyway, wow, that was a trip down memory lane. How did we do that? Oh, we played a promo. That's right. Let's not do that again.
The show is all about tangents.
Let's do this and play a Hacks and Strange Story. We have a story from Cape Cod Times, which we don't quote all that often. I'm wondering how this got in here. A little before 8 a.m. Friday, veteran lobster diver Michael Packard entered the water for his second dive of the day. His vessel, the J&J, was off Herring Cove Beach and surrounded by a fleet of boat-catching striped bass. The water temperature was a balmy 60 degrees, and the visibility was about 20 feet. Where are we going with this, you ask? I'm glad you asked. Licensed commercial lobster divers literally pluck lobsters off the sandy bottom, and as Packard, age 56, dove down Friday morning, he saw schools, or as the Brits like to say, shoals of sand lances and stripers swimming by. The ocean floor chain was in full evidence, but about 10 feet from the bottom, Packard suddenly knew what it truly felt like to be part of that chain. In something truly biblical, Packard was swallowed whole by a humpback whale.
Holy crap. Can you imagine?
I was just going to make a holy reference and call him Jonah, but okay. All of a sudden, I felt this huge shove, and the next thing I knew, it was completely black. Packard recalled Friday afternoon following his release from Cape Cod Hospital in Hyannis. Quote, I could sense I was moving, and I could feel the whale squeezing the muscles in his mouth. That could crush you.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Because the way that they eat is they take in all this water, and then their tongue forces the water out and filters it through the baleen. So really what they got, they don't have teeth, but they have this
wiry thing.
Yeah, like a push broom all across the front of their face.
Right.
And the krill or the shrimp or whatever they're eating are stuck to this, and then they lick it off the push broom and swallow it. So, yeah, he would have been thrown up against that. Initially, Packard thought he was inside a great white shark. Oh, that'd be a bad day. That'd be a big shark if he swallowed you whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have to be huge.
You're going to need a bigger boat. Inside, he couldn't feel any teeth, and he hadn't suffered any obvious wounds. It quickly dawned on him that he'd been swallowed by a whale. I was completely inside. It was completely black, Packard said. I thought to myself, there's no way I'm going to get out of here.
Say Captain Kirk?
I'm done. I'm dead. All I could think of was my boys. They're 12 and 15 years old. Yes. Suddenly, his inner William Shatner comes through.
Yeah, I know.
Outfitted with scuba gear, he struggled, and the whale began shaking its head so that Packard could tell he didn't like it. I got a diver stuck in my throat.
It's like a cat.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you swallow a fishbone. He estimated he was in the whale for about 30 to 40 seconds before the whale finally surfaced. I saw light, and he started throwing his head from side to side, and the next thing I knew, I was outside in the water, said Packard, who lives in Wellfleet. Woo! Packard's sister, Cynthia Packard, spoke to the chairman, Josiah Mayo, with crewman Josiah Mayo, who relayed some of the details to her. Packard said Mayo saw the whale burst to the surface, and then he initially thought it was a great white shark.
No, he thought it was a shark, too.
It must have been pretty small. How can you confuse a great white shark with a humpback whale?
Yeah. Well, similar shape.
These people live on the sea. You know,
Hey, makes you question their career choices, doesn't it?
You sure we're eating lobster, honey? Oh, this guy can't tell a shark from a whale.
Yeah.
There was all this action at the top of the water, Packard told Mayo. Then the whale flung her brother back into the sea. Mayo picked him up, called by radio to shore, and sped back to the Provincetown Pier. A Provincetown Fire Department ambulance took him to the Cape Cod Hospital. Thank God it wasn't a white shark. He sees them all the time out there.
Hey, said Cynthia. Hey, Captain Obvious, thanks.
He must have thought he was done.
All right.
So based on what was described, this would have been a mistake and an accident on the part of the humpback, said Juke Robbins, director of humpback whale studies at the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown. Humpbacks are not aggressive animals, particularly towards humans, she said. This humpback was described by Mayo as being a medium-sized. Michael Packard said, and Robin suspects it was a juvenile feeding on sandlands. When a humpback opens his mouth to feed, blah, 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 billows out like a parachute, blocking the animal's forward vision. Oh, so couldn't really see.
No, I have a feeling he was in the wrong place, and the whale went down for whatever it saw and or thought. And
speaking of things you can caught in your mouth, I just had something. We were eating popcorn earlier.
Yeah, you gotta start slinging your head back and forth.
And spit out a diver. What? How'd that get in there again?
That's right.
All right. Let's give a shout out to the chat room. We do have a few people that are hanging out with us on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time. We put up the contact. We put up the birthday. We haven't done the Patreon thing. Just making sure we get all the buttons and get to show you all the titles tonight. So thank you very much for everybody who's hanging out with us. We've got, you know what? I don't see anyone in the chat. Nobody said anything.
John Miller Jr.
Beautiful.
John Miller Jr. You got to change who you're acting as.
Oh, you can see him. So if I pretend I'm Chuck Tomasi. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Sorry about that, John. I guess I clicked on my own link or something and it gave me myself. That's why I didn't see you in there at first.
No owls were harmed. The whale rang Packard's bell. He really Packard him in there. Says, I'm not spending all this effort on one diver. But hey, get me a whole school of them and we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk. Yeah, that's right.
All right. So 9:30 on Sundays. If you want to join us live, Facebook and YouTube, hang out with us. Follow us on either one of them, you know, set those notifications up and you will get notifications like that. It says, hey, Technorama's live.
I'm going to listen. Oh, wait.
No, we are. We're kind of watching and monitoring at the same time.
It's like Spaceballs. When was the movie.
This is now. Go past that part. Never watch that again.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a quick remember when. We have another story for you. So, Craig, give us the 411 on remember when.
Well, actually, I started thinking this sounds like a end of the earth kind of story. So frozen in Siberian permafrost for 24,000 years, microscopic animal comes back to life.
Isn't that, don't the frogs do this every year? They freeze themselves and then antifreeze in their blood?
Yeah, I forget what frogs they are, but yeah. So nature creating an ancient creature began eating and even reproducing after it was pulled out of the ice.
Let's hope it wasn't like an ancient creature that caused the mass extinction of something because it's a virus.
Yeah, I was going to say that. 2 minutes later, all the scientists were on the floor.
Right.
Dead. Anyway, a lone rotifier,
Rottweiler.
Rottweiler has awakened after spending the past 24,000 years in frozen hibernation. Scientists hope that further studies of this multicellular animal may lead to better ways of cryopreserving human cells, tissues, and organs. Rottifiers are worm-like aquatic animals that prefer freshwater environments and moist soil.
Are they related to tardigrades?
Doesn't look like. I wouldn't say so by looking at it.
They don't have the little arms.
No, and a little duck mouth thing. Anyway, so rotifiers are worm-like aquatic animals. They prefer freshwater environments and moist soil. These complex organisms aren't as charismatic as tardigrades. So if you let me finish.
Charismatic. The tardigrades are other. Hey, vote for tardigrades. Hey, baby. Vote for tardigrades. Watch my special on Hulu.
Yeah, Discovery Plus. Another microscopic animal, but they are likewise known for their extreme survival skills, as they are capable of withstanding dehydration, freezing temperatures, and starvation, and low oxygen levels.
They'll be the only ones around after the asteroid hits.
That's right. By reviving a 24,000-year-old rotifier found in Siberian permafrost, scientists have demonstrated that these creatures are even tougher than previously thought. The new findings were published today in Current Biology. It's a paper.
About water, because the whales, you know, the currents. Anyway, never mind.
Yeah, current, yeah. One report is proof as of today that multicellular animals can withstand tens of thousands of years in cryobiosis.
Cryptobiosis.
Cryptobiosis. What did I say?
Cryo? No, it's crypto, like the currency. Yeah,
it's like Bitcoin. The state of almost completely arrested metabolism, said Stan Malavan. A co-author of the study in a press release, Malavan is a biologist at the Soil Cryology Laboratory and at the Institute of Physicochemical and Biological Problems in Soil Science in Pushchino, Russia.
Pushchino. Wow,
Soil Cryology Laboratory at the Institute of Physicochemical and Biological Problems. They need an acronym.
Physicochemical, the IPBP.
Okay. Still, they need a bit of.
Pretty neat. So this thing survived.
Yes, and there's a lot more details.
24,000 years. How did they know?
Well, I guess they were able to, test the age of the permafrost around it.
Reading on, it looks like also got a nematode from about 32,000 years ago.
Wow. The late Pleistocene layer holding the rotifier specimen was radiocarbon dated to approximately 24,000 years ago, which is roughly 12,500 years prior to the end of the most recent ice age.
That's what Pleistocene means.
Yep.
I guess I got to start reading the science ones. Oh, wait, then I'd be reading almost everything. Except for the diver who got swallowed by a humpback.
No, I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, not really remember when, but I wonder what this thing remembers. Man, well, I'm just swimming here, and I wake up, and there's all the carbon dioxide levels are through the roof. What's going on?
Instead of started eating, they threw it a cheeseburger.
What'd you do with this planet?
We didn't have these back then.
We're taking over the planet again.
Yeah. Wake up, Steve.
Steve the Rotifer.
Yeah.
Get my whole Rotifer clan back together.
Actually, I bet our buddy Steve London in Sweden, I bet he can go find some Rotifers around. It's pretty cold there all the time.
Didn't they wake these guys up in the permafrost of Siberia? Steve's not close to Siberia. Nobody's close to Siberia.
He's closer than us.
maybe not.
Wait a minute.
All right, let's move on and give a big thanks. We mentioned our patrons earlier. They are the people that keep this show going because we have software to purchase and fund and subscribe and hosting and all that good stuff. And you guys are the geniuses, the generous geniuses. Well, there's a new... Hey, that could be a good band name, too. The people like Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen, Christina and Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez. Thank you to Saturday Morning Media and Stephen Wishy and Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London, who we just mentioned moments ago. They went to push the button. Other title. They went over to patreon.com/technoromapodcast. Just make sure I spelled it right.
Right.
Sometimes when you're working fast on a Saturday, things come out a little goofy. But
Don't I know that.
So, yes, they went to patreon.com/technoromapodcast. For as little as a dollar a show, they don't only get their names read out with huge admiration, love, and pride, but they also get a special episode that Craig and I are going to record right after this, where we just
kind of sit around and drink brandy, smoke cigars, and tell stories.
Is that what we're doing? Okay.
Kind of. That's what we're after. When we get there, we'll let you know. So that's our Patreon appreciation. And when we travel, like we will be doing again, there, Dragon Con, we got to get some postcards.
Yep.
We can still get our 2021 postcards into our patrons. Yeah, baby. Yes, if you haven't gone to Patreon and put in your postal address, please let us know and we'd be happy to send you one. So they get a postcard, undying gratitude, as I mentioned, and they keep the show running. Maybe it's their fault why this show is still running.
They're enablers. I think that's the correct term for it.
We've been doing all right by them. Thank you once again, patrons. All right. Quick episode of Pass Me the Remote, because the show is getting a little long tonight. But this is the last thing we got to do. So I have finally finished up Stargate Atlantis, all 5 seasons. And I was expecting a bigger finish, but I do like the way that the show progressed. They did take some characters out and put some new ones in. So there was a nice rotation going on. Towards the end, Robert Picardo, who is in Stargate SG-1 as Mr. Woolsey, repeats a few cameos here and there throughout the first few seasons, but he makes a stronger presence in, I think it was season 5. So look forward to that. There's also, obviously, Jason Momoa steps in, I think it was somewhere in season 2, and was a main character for the rest of the series. Very strong presence by him. A lot of fun. Now, obviously, Stargate SG-1 started in the late 90s, so the effects weren't there, and it kind of had this cheesy effect, but it grew on you. This is a continuation. You don't need to see Stargate SG-1 beforehand, but it helps. It helps. It ties in. It's kind of like watching Deep Space Nine without watching TNG in the Star Trek series. So, you know, there's some connection. You want to be familiar with the universe, although it takes place mainly in the Pegasus Galaxy, so very far, far away. Love the show. I like the characters. Like where they went with it. Good universe building. And you know, it didn't really get stale. There were a few episodes where I kind of went, okay.
Well, you have that with anything.
They had some recurring threads. There's one actor who makes an appearance as a couple different characters, and you can spot him in an instant. I like the way that they didn't really give any of the Wraith. They didn't have names. So whenever they captured one, Joe Flanagan, who plays the character of, oh my gosh, how did I forget this after 5 seasons?
You just watched this.
Yes. Lieutenant Colonel John Shepard. Thank you. Wow. That was, my brain has moved on fast.
Wow. I had to work hard for that one.
Yeah. And he's like lead actor and lead character. I remember the character's name. The actor's name, but, he starts naming them. He goes, okay, we'll just call you Todd. the Wraith makes an appearance several more times, and they just keep calling him Todd.
That's funny.
So I think he named 3 in total. There was Michael, Todd, and Kenny was another one he named. Kenny wasn't around long. Right. I don't know if that was a South Park reference or not.
I was going to say, he keeps getting dying off and he keeps coming back.
Well, he said, oh, I know this kid in high school named Kenny. That was about as much reference as we got out of Kenny. Right. So, all right, Stargate Atlantis, a lot of fun. If you're a sci-fi fan and you haven't seen it, it was on air, if I remember right, from like 2005 to 2010 or 2004 to 2009, somewhere in the knots that was the major presence. So it's been off the air for quite a long time. And
did it hold up?
It does. It actually does hold up well. The effects are good. A lot of CG. There's a few things like they haven't come up with smartphones yet. You know, every time you see them back on Earth, you know, kind of technology.
Flip phone.
When they were, that kind of stuff. But
we were watching something the other night, and the girl picked up the phone, and it was a cordless phone. Whipped out the antenna and made a phone call.
If you go back into the Wayback Machine and you start watching Supernatural, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that was started in 2006 as well. All right. What do you got on your plate? Oh, it's on Hulu. And I would give this, I'm going to give it a 9. I really enjoyed it. And it kept me going. I would sit down and watch 2, 3, 4 episodes at a SWAT. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I started watching, and so this is not a full review, but I started watching Sweet Tooth on Netflix.
Okay.
And I think Harrison and I, my son, I think it was 3 episodes we watched so far, and it's actually pretty good. The premise is there's a virus. And right when the virus had started, children were being born as hybrids, where we're animal human mixes, and there was unexplained.
Okay, it sounds like a little bit of bestiality going on.
Well, the thing is, then you have this idea that did the hybrids cause the virus, or are they a cause of the virus? And then you got people wanting to hunt them and do them harm. And, you know, then people are surprised that this one actually speaks, and you have to watch that. I'm not going to give away too much.
Talking dog.
But I love the premise. It's actually a graphic novel that came out through DC a long time ago. And it's really good. It's got a great tone to it.
Why is it called Sweet Tooth?
Because you'll find out, the guy was kind of baiting to catch him with candy bars.
Oh, hey kids, so, I got some candy.
It's really a nickname. So
you might be a centaur, but I got candy.
Yeah, but it's really, I gotta say one thing, the special effects are fantastic. The babies that she was holding up, one of them looked like had a puppy nose and little floppy ears, and she was holding it up, and the doctor was like, what the hell's going on here? A bunch of animals, but it just looked really cute. They made it look, plausible. So
yeah, I kind of got that feeling on Grimm as well. They did the transformations real fast of facial features. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I like watching those kinds of things. There was another one. Was it Carnival? Something like
that. Yeah, I never watched that. It was on Prime, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. With the Fae people and the, you know,
yeah.
You believe they had wings and could fly. It was
amazing. I think I saw a couple episodes of that, and it looked it looked very good. I was thinking they really had a budget
with Orlando Bloom. It was I think the biggest name that I recognized out of there, so a lot of fun. All right, what would you give it so far if you're watching it?
Well, I didn't want to review it just yet, but
okay, we'll wait till the end.
How it's going to be a solid. I think it's going to end up being solid, so I'll wait till I end.
Is this the first season, or are you jumping in?
It is the first season, yes.
Okay, because there's some shows that we're being introduced to that are either run and done, or they're still in progress. No, it's like, hey, we're on season 3, and I just discovered
this is a Netflix production. Robert Downey Jr. is involved somewhere. I think he was producing it or something with his wife, and so, but yeah, it's a Netflix production, and I don't want to really review it yet, but it looks solid so far.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll come back to that one when you are done with season 1. How's that sound?
Yep.
Okay. Our question of the week for you before we turn you loose is, what is a famous movie that you cannot understand the appeal of? Oh, wow. I'm going to have to think of that one, because there's been a number of them like, okay. Oh, I got one. Birdman. I tried watching that and I could not get into it. I was like, and it's like critically acclaimed. It's won some awards. Mm-hmm. Michael Keaton. I'm like, what?
It's one of those where I think Michael Keaton did a good job, but somewhere along the line, the story is missing something.
Was it cerebral? Was I supposed to be looking for something that I just completely missed? Because
I don't remember really loving it myself either. Okay. So.
Anyway,
I was going to say Starship Troopers. That movie did nothing for me.
I thought it was fun at the time, but it seems to have taken on a meme of its own.
I think the little news clips, if I remember right, you know, they're like, it was kind of like a commercial, almost like newsreel kind of, little pieces they had in between the story, were interesting, but
at the time, you know, it was a fun effects movie, like, oh man, giant bug aliens.
I know.
Good stuff.
Well, yeah, they were throwing rocks at Earth, you know.
And what's her name? It was, you know, some eye candy for my younger self. Was it Denise Roberts?
And your current self, I'm sure, huh?
Was it Denise Roberts? Who was it?
Yeah. Anyway, go IMDb it, kids, or you're probably yelling at your podcast going, no, Chuck, you moron. Okay. Or tell us, call us on the, there we go. Get in touch with us. I'm going to put the thing back up on the video. 707-530-2428. Correct me if I'm wrong or pat me on the back if I'm right. Either one. We want to hear from you. We're going to go record our Patreon show because we are out of here. It is out of time. We appreciate you hanging out with us. There's supposed to be some music that should have started right there. There it is.
There you go.
Okay. So again, 707-530-2428 if you want to be like John and call us on the listener line or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Easy, quick. You're probably holding a mobile device or near some kind of electronic device right now.
Hit the numbers. Call us.
Bang one out for us. You can find all our information over at chuckchat.com. Technorama icon. It's been that way for close to two decades.
Getting there.
We're not getting any younger, kids. Not sure how much longer we
can
hold this podcast thing together. But it's a fun run while we're going. It's about the only running I'm going to get these days. So we will talk to you real soon. Craig, thanks for all the help putting the stories together, show notes, and getting everything posted. Till then, give them a binary high five.
All right. 101.
Take care. Stay safe, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Watch out for the meteor.